We Talk Wrestling is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Check out the Geek Nation Tours New York Comic Con package, combining all the excitement of the convention with a tour of the city and the coolest sights for the superhero fan. You'll recognize locations from films and books and visit geek culture sites like Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Mo.
And today's show is the Dusty Rhodes show.
Yeah, in memory of Dusty Rhodes. Of course, I hate doing these shows.
Yes.
You know, I just hate doing these shows. And I mean, a lot of people obviously are doing something for Dusty. Some are dedicating whole shows, some just segments. But yeah, there's no way we couldn't. No way we can't. Give Dusty his own show. He's
the bull of the woods, if you will.
Yeah.
The really, when you think about like the WWF having Hogan and Savage in terms of the top stars, really in many ways you had Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes in the AWA.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's what about this is the passing of an era for me is Hulk Hogan was, in my childhood, the babyface hero for the WWF. The biggest star.
Yes.
Right? The babyface for the biggest rival was Dusty.
Was Dusty, yeah.
Dusty was there, so that's it. I mean, if, you know, that's the...
And you could throw, if you're looking at a five in the 80s, maybe you put a Sting in there towards the end. It kind of Sting and Warrior, I guess, it would be the two levels there.
Yeah, that would be, like 80, late 88, 89, really 89 as Sting would have emerged.
Sure.
I mean, the decade's over.
Yeah.
And the Sting was for WCW in the 90s, but Dusty was for the
80s. NWA, yeah.
For the NWA and WCW in the 80s. Yeah.
But I mean,
so he was. That's what it is about an era for me. Is I'm going, okay, that was the baby face for the rival, the company that the only company to really ever put any challenge on WWF / WWE for like a decade and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, when you think about, I mean, I even look back at the fact that. You think about how he started his career as a heel.
Yep.
As a Texas
Outlaw. Dirty Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
Starting off marriage by Gary Hart.
Yeah.
And, you know, very much the type of guy who do take a lot of bumps for the baby faces. Athletic bumping heel.
Yeah.
You know, but charismatic. A good talker already, even though he had a manager talking for him a lot of the time then. And then, like you say, but even then, even though he had success right away, because he carried himself like a star from the beginning.
Yeah.
He really, like you say, it was when he teamed up with Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch.
Yes.
That they, as a heel team, a very successful heel team, that's when he started to find himself within the industry. And we would talk about that a long time, how you got to find yourself. And that was the great thing about the you wouldn't get national exposure until after you pretty much have found yourself and found your acumen. took years.
Yeah.
Whereas now you go in you know, in a developmental,
yeah.
you spend a year or two, you might try a couple different acts, and if it doesn't work, you're kind of screwed.
Then you're done, yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, you think, yeah, he was heel, and then he was teaming with a fellow Pak Song, a Korean wrestler.
Korean assassin, I think it was his, something like that.
They were fighting the bookers, Eddie and Mike Graham, in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and with the babyface team, the babyface family, if you will, of Florida. And Pak Song accidentally hit Dusty Rhodes by accident when Mike Graham moved, and Dusty got pissed at that and beat the shit out of Pak Song, and the crowd exploded.
Yeah. Well, they had already were starting to, I mean, they had done a test. They had had Dusty against Jack Briscoe.
Yes.
And Briscoe was huge in the Florida and that area. And massive star. But they had a match where they went like 45 minutes and Dusty got a visual pinfall on him and he put his foot on the ropes. Briscoe did to stop the count instead of kicking out.
Yes.
And it's the baby face and the crowd started to boo him and go for Dusty. And they did that spot on purpose to see if the crowd would... Like if he would work as a baby face to the crowd if they were ready to accept him.
Yes.
So it seemed like they were getting behind him. So, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, he had that for his career. He starts off as a heel... You know,
if you will,
he starts off as the heel, then he becomes, the crowd's ready to get behind him, so they naturally turn him babyface. And then, of course, during the late 80s, they started to boo on him again, but he didn't turn, and that's kind of when he ended up actually going to the WWF.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that same, I mean, that was when, wrestling generally is not, this never leads to times, they fall behind the times,
mm-hmm.
and that was a lot with the, you know, you talk about Dusty and Hogan, and people were starting at that late 80s to get sick of,
This isn't a new phenomenon with John Cena. I mean, people get sick of somebody on top.
That's right.
Maybe, you know, get sick of somebody on top for, that's always happened.
Sure, they used
to edit it. And that did happen with Dusty at some point, yeah.
They used to edit it, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Go to the Royal Rumble 92 with Hogan as a specific example, right? Live, he's getting booed out of the building, and then editing, Sid is. So that's your example. But, I mean, he comes over, turns that baby face, becomes the American Dream.
Starts making huge money down there in Florida.
Down where?
Down there.
And then he goes to the WWWF.
Yes. Well, as part of it. And he went to a lot of territories. When he became a hot act in Florida, he's drawing money.
Yeah.
Then all the territories. And then it would be the same thing where Eddie Graham would put him out of the territory occasionally. And it would be New York or other places. And he did it because when Dusty was there, he couldn't make another top star because Dusty overshadowed him.
Right.
So it's like the only way I can push somebody else up and get somebody else who can draw money beside Dusty or eventually to turn against Dusty is to get Dusty out of here for a while.
And because...
But most famously, I would say, that run in the late 70s where he gets up to New York and takes on Graham.
Yeah.
Is
Superstar Billy Graham.
Superstar Billy Graham, yeah.
But the main reason for Eddie Graham, to tell you another Graham, would do that... is you're right, because Dusty would overshadow other people. And because this is the wrestling business, most famously, he would loan out Dusty to, say, New York, so he could get his son over.
Yeah, well, his son is actually one of one of Dusty's best friends.
Yes.
I respected Mike Graham.
Yeah,
but
who's an idiot. But,
wow.
Yeah, no, he's an idiot.
No.
Yeah,
no.
He is. No, he is actually, it turns out, Mike Graham, idiot.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Really, no, seriously. No.
He's an idiot now. But because the business again passed him by and he got bitter.
Yeah.
But he's another one of those guys who had a lot to give and
was an idiot.
And a guy like Dusty who learned a lot from
his dad
back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, both of them.
Well,
his dad was really a booking genius, though, Eddie Graham.
Yes.
Was a very, very much, I mean, you Mike talk Graham, about Dusty.
See, Mike Graham not so much, which is what Dusty learned.
Huh. What you learn about, because you talk about Dusty, and obviously Dusty learned under Eddie Graham. And so did Bill Watts. And those are kind of two of the more successful performer-turned-bookers guys. So Graham's booking influence was huge. you know,
yeah,
through those two gentlemen.
And it goes up, you know, you think about superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes and the promos. You know, just this promo battle. They only had, I think it was, what, three matches in Square Garden. They headlined Madison Square Garden twice.
Yeah.
I think it was
first. It was supposed to be something to hold a holdover before. Even in his promos, Dusty, when he was up there, would cut these great promos, but he would put over Bob Backlund.
Yeah.
In the promos often, because Backlund was the guy being groomed.
Yes.
To take over from
superstar
Billy Graham.
Yeah.
But he would cut these tremendous promos, like you say, both of them would, because they were just unbelievable. And they drew huge. And it's one of those things where people talk about how great Graham was drawing as a champion, and then they took the belt off him anyways.
Yeah.
Was Graham drawing as a champion, or was Dusty?
Well, that's it. That's it. And, I'm, you know, it really is a combination of the two, right? Yeah. I mean, did Hogan draw or did Andre draw? Well, they both did. You know, they drew together. And that's, you know, Austin or Rock. Well, they both did, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
And it really is the same.
Piper or Hogan. Thing.
Piper Hogan, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, he come in and main evented the Garden and was just sort of short-term run, you know, there. And, you know, finished up. Like most guys, because of the agreement. He never really put anybody over on his way out because of the way that
somebody over on the way out. He put over, like I say, Backlund and promos, but he never did the job to somebody.
He endorsed, endorsed him, right? And then you go over, and then you think about him beating Harley Race.
Yes.
For the NWA title.
Yes.
And just how much that title meant because of Harley.
Harley was, there had been so many for years. I mean, the NWA title was the top title for most of the country because you consistently had either a great wrestler or a great heel touring the country as the champion. And Harley certainly fit the bill as both a great heel and a great wrestler.
Yes.
And so, it was a pretty big upset when Dusty beat him. And he didn't have it long.
He didn't have it long, no.
But it was a big upset, but it was also, again, Dusty winning that title was the first time that it was somebody who didn't look like an athlete. Like, it wasn't a bodybuilder, we've gotten used to.
No.
But it was somebody who looked like an athlete, somebody who looked like they were in great shape. I mean, Harley back in the day did look like an athlete, Briscoe, we talked about already, Dory Funk Jr., these different guys, like, they always looked like an amateur wrestler or an athlete, Harley, or a legit tough guy.
Harley looked, like a barroom brawler tough guy.
Yeah, but an athletic tough guy.
Yeah.
Dusty, even when Dusty was smaller than what you would know him as, you know, if you saw him in the 90s and the 80s, even when then, he still didn't look like an athlete. That actually was one of the most significant things about him was that he won that title. He was really the first guy to look like that, to win that NWA title. Yeah.
Also showing, it does show the influence and respect that Eddie Graham had in the NWA.
Oh, no question.
Because, he's pushing for that. And you're right, Dusty had the splotch.
Yeah.
You know?
But Dusty had the splotch, that birthmark, but also he had, like I say, he didn't have the build, but he didn't have it long either. It was really Dusty got that title that time.
Yeah.
So that Graham could promote former world champion.
Yes.
And create more heat on him when he got screwed by Terry Funk out of the belt.
That's right.
Which is what happened next. And then he and Terry Funk, they had for decades a feud on and off, and for decades it drew.
Oh, yeah. And there, their feud, would close WCW with the feud.
And then it went into the independent scenes after that.
Well, Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling always used to have Flair versus Rhodes, the Dusty promotion that he owned and whatever for a couple of years. It was 3 years after WCW went out of business. They would do that, but you just think of, Dusty Rhodes, NWA, though, he was, we mentioned it before, he became the booker.
Yeah, he did.
And, say what you will about him booking, War Games.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about him was, and we see this a lot, and he's not alone on this. Some of the guys who are the most innovative, they run through their ideas too quickly.
Yeah.
And they get repetitive, and they start to believe their own hype. And he kind of fell into that category.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start doing, you have something, and it's original one time. And we talk about here, I mean, here in Calgary, we had the same thing with Bruce Hart, which was a brilliant creative mind.
Heel ref, nut shots, yeah.
Yeah, but eventually he burned out the same things, even though he had come up with a lot of innovative stuff, and it first turned the territory around. And it's much the same thing with Dusty.
The Dusty finish, I mean.
The Dusty finish is obviously the most famous one, and he gets mad about that, saying that finish being around since he was a kid.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, well, who knows, but Dusty used it multiple times. So. Yes,
and well, I mean, it's exactly.
And if you're not familiar with the Dusty Finish, WWE's used it recently, but explain it to people.
It's basically, I mean, well, we just saw Dusty Finish on the, at the end of Elimination Chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, ironically, and it's basically someone pins the champ, is announced as the new champion, and then it used to be people went home thinking they saw a new champion, and then would find out on TV that the board of directors had ruled it, where more commonly now the original referee say wakes up and it gets a disqualification and it's announced within minutes on the show. But that's what it used to be, is you'd think you had a new champion when you got home, and then you would wait to find out on TV.
Yeah, that what you saw was
bullshit.
Yeah. So people felt ripped off. Because this happened to them multiple times.
Yes.
And it would actually kill towns.
It would.
But before that, he had drawn them in. Like you say, you talk about War Games. The Bunkhouse Brawl was something else. Bunkhouse Stampede, yeah.
You know, that was the original...
scaffold matches.
Well, the Bunkhouse Stampede was the reason for the Royal Rumble.
Yes, exactly.
And you know, when he created this Bunkhouse Stampede, and so on pay-per-view, so WWF created the Royal Rumble on free TV on the USA Network to go head up on it.
I think, the first three Bunkhouse Stampedes. I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That was where I was going to go with it next. I mean, War Games, the match beyond, one of the most innovative, one of the greatest concepts in wrestling history. I would say that, and ironically... probably, you know, the Hell in the Cell, but I mean, everything that's just an,
but even an Hell in the Cell is an, yeah.
of War Games, you know.
I mean, War Games was War Games changed.
I would say War Games and the Royal Rumble actually would be the two,
the two most, you know? As far as matches during our lifetime, maybe the ladder match, I think, would be the third that you would
play. I guess, and that's actually probably the most original, because the War Games was a cage, taken off of a cage, and the Royal Rumble taken off a Battle Royal. But the ladder match, of course,
for those of you who aren't familiar with War Games, which might be some of you, because you've only watched WWE and they've never had it, even though they have the property for it.
Yes, and then a DVD of it.
Essentially, it is...
also a baby butt wipe.
Four or five people on a team, and two people enter a cage, and then there's a coin toss.
There's actually a coin toss.
A coin toss.
Yeah.
There's a coin toss, and to decide who's next in there. So the two guys will wrestle for 5 minutes, and then somebody will come out, either heel or babyface, and always manage to be the heel. They'd get the 2-on-1 advantage.
Huh.
And that so the guy, so simple. Yeah, and then the next guy would come out, and that'd be the babyface, and they even it up, and the babyface comeback. But and so it doesn't sound like much, but the execution and the heat behind it, behind Dusty's team versus, you know, like
the four horsemen.
You know, who this was it. This was they were finally getting all four of them in the cage.
That's right.
The baby face who started had been beat down now consistently most of the time.
Dusty, Magnum, the Road Warriors against the Four Horsemen. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. You
know, all those guys.
And you'll look back and you'll see year-end awards and you know, magazines and newsletters and that type of thing. And War Games was either in the running or won match of the year numerous times.
Yes.
In different incarnations. It just worked.
Yeah.
And I still hope there. I still hold out hope we'll see it again someday.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know. I mean, Triple H is a huge fan, right?
Yeah, that concept.
The only reason that you may not, I mean, the only thing that they would do
is because Vince will live forever.
Yes, well, there's that. And I mean, and they've Vince likes to do it. So, essentially the Elimination Chamber is what a WWF version of a War Games.
But because it's not teams, and it's not one title. Guy getting the heat for so long, it's not the same.
I understand, it's not the
same. Don't get me wrong, the last thing I want to see is for them to turn it into a network special or a regular event. I wanted to see when it's logical, maybe once every 3-4 years, the right storyline, you bring it out.
Yeah.
But then again, that's also I'd like to see Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, exactly. But no, instead you'll see the New Day and the Ascension against, in the War Games, against the primetime
players.
If you
do see it, yeah.
That'd be fucking... But... No, I mean, the Booker, and then you go to the opposite end of the spectrum, and the announcement that...
And by the way, even Survivor Series was a takeoff of War Games.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, teams of five strive to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, but you go to the opposite end of the spectrum, I think the most famous one, shocked the world. That's Uncle Fred!
That's Uncle Fred, yeah.
With the Shockmaster and Vince and
Dusty. That was Ole Anderson who booked that, though.
No, that was Dusty.
No, that was Dusty.
That was Dusty. Dusty Rhodes has said on one of the Legends roundtables that he and Vince go back and forth talking about whether the Shockmaster or the Gobbledygooker was a worst idea. They actually have debates about it.
That was Ole Anderson who did the voice. And spray paint. It was his idea. Now, don't get me wrong.
No, Dusty booked it.
Dusty was the booker. Dusty signed off on it.
Yes.
Dusty didn't come up with it.
I think he did.
No, he didn't. Mm. Ole Anderson came up with it.
Wow.
But Dusty was the booker, and he and Aunt Ole were kind of much...
Well, he made co-booked kind of,
they
it.
They co-booked it, yeah, okay, basically. Yes.
But,
at the time, yeah.
But yes, I mean, that runs to your, your awful...
And there is, and we talk about he managed to get kind of repetitive in a lot of what he did. On the other hand, as booker, he booked himself,
yes.
You know, when he's booking Ronnie Garvin to take on Ric Flair, he's booking himself as the U.S. champion, proudly.
Yes.
Like, he didn't look at those secondary belts, and he's booking, when he was the booker, he booked himself as TV champion and as the,
yep.
You know, in a great feud with Tully Blanchard. Over the TV title.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing, the U.S. title, he booked himself into that, so he wasn't, unlike someone like Triple H, who just look at it and go, well, I'm
better than the Intercontinental title.
Yeah. Dusty didn't do that, which was cool.
That was. I mean, even you think about, even 94 when he got back and he, you know, got the booking power back in WCW, and that's when the Shockmaster came through. But I mean, it was the Shockmaster, and then the year later in the War Games, it was Dusty and Dustin.
That's
right. And the Nasty Boys against Colonel Parker's stud stable.
And this led for, well, I mean, in 94 probably he cut... I mean, I think obviously the most famous promo is obviously the
hard times,
yeah. But the promo he did for his son, talking about how basically I wasn't that good a dad growing up,
no,
but I'm here for you now.
Yeah,
the view never changes. Talking about Arn Anderson always being from behind, where the view never changes.
Yeah,
this was. Probably, I think this is his best promo.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Arn Anderson, Teddy Funk, mean.
Yeah,
coming for you.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, we'll get into his promos, I'm sure, but a little more. But yeah, I mean, he in this era he had the great feuds in the 80s.
Yeah.
When they were, like I say, he was. I mean, if you look at what Hulk Hogan is,
mm-hmm.
And then you look at what he was. And they were both the top babyface stars of their company,
yep.
and era, in the different size. But could you pick two more polar opposites?
In terms of look.
Yeah, well, personality, too.
They could both talk, though. I mean,
they could both talk. You
know,
that.
It was, you know something, brother. Let me tell you a bit. You know, they both had that charisma, that same... sort of
the charisma was the
promo. I mean, we talk about Sting, and the reason that Sting came to be or was even needed in terms of a top babyface star is because that's when Dusty Rhodes left for WWE. Well,
and they wanted it to be Lex Luger, but yeah. Lex Luger wasn't, you know. But as this is a story you might hear again sometime, you probably heard in the past, when Lex Luger was given the chance to be the top baby face, it didn't work out.
It turned out it did not work out.
Never seems to work.
Huh.
But yeah, I mean...
Learned their lesson, though.
Tully Blanchard? The feud with Tully Blanchard. I mean, his three greatest feuds, probably the feud with Tully.
Yeah.
He had a great feud. Well, him and Nikita Koloff, like you say, you know, ended up teaming up. And,
superpowers.
Yeah, as the superpowers, and that was awesome. But
against the Road Warriors.
Yeah, that's I think, the second... I mean, obviously, the Flair and the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of Tully, and that's part of Ole, you know, feuding with them.
And Terry Funk.
And Terry Funk, obviously, the feuds with Funk that lasted so many decades. But
and the Boss Man.
But yeah, I mean, that feud with the Road Warriors was... Yeah. That was what got him fired.
Yes, it was.
Because he... And this was Dusty's... We talk about, like, him going to the same thing. Dusty was successful because Dusty was an egomaniac.
Yes.
And you talk about, like... I mean, I'm reading his book right now. And his ego is unbelievable. And he's like that, too, in the Rare Shoot interviews or whatever that is out there.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have been who he was without that ego. So, I mean, he had to have that. That's what made him Dusty Rhodes and why he was the star he was.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
But it also is... It costs... And to have that ego, as much as it gives to you, it costs you a lot, too. And it costs Dusty in both his personal life a lot... And it cost him professionally a lot. They made a... He had the violent angle already with his eye attacked by the Road Warriors. And they told him they weren't comfortable with the Crockett's and this type of thing. They weren't comfortable with the level of blood and violence.
Yeah.
So he went out and on purpose at Starrcade.
Yeah, it was Starrcade.
In Starrcade 88, it went out on purpose and went, you can't tell Dusty Rhodes what to do, baby. And went out on purpose and went even more bloody than before than what they had done already that made him uncomfortable. Because he's the booker, and you can't tell him what to do. And then they told him, we're not comfortable with this. So they fired him.
Yep.
They fired him both as a booker and as a performer. And that's how he ends up in the WWE. And it's his ego.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't need to do it. It was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
He did it because nobody can tell Dusty Rhodes what to do.
And ironically, that was the mantra that he had. It was no one could tell Dusty Rhodes what to do. And then he gets fired. And he, we'll call it, has to go to WWF.
Yes.
And wear polka dots.
Well, that's exactly it. Now you got to eat crow.
We talk about one of the best promos of all time. With the Americana Butcher Shop.
Well, not a great promo. It's a great vignette.
It's a great line.
It's a great line.
It's a great line.
Go ahead and do it for everybody. Or do you want to just
beat on prices?
Let me just find it on the phone.
You should find it, actually, because that's okay.
Let me just finish this this game of supercard.
Supercard.
I lose, you know.
I have epic, I have a legendary Luke Harper already, so I'm trying to get a second one.
Luke Harper?
Yeah.
Legendary?
Survivor.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm trying to get another one combine them.
So what we're saying is we are multitasking.
Yes.
But we hope it's not enjoying your affecting your enjoyment.
No.
It probably is.
But
still, I mean, we appreciate your listening.
The son of a plumber.
Son of a plumber.
The common man, Dusty Rhodes, baby.
Yeah.
He comes in, his first feud is with the Big Boss Man.
It is, yes.
He wears the hat and the nightstick, and is feuding with the Boss Man for a little while, and then he transitions over and gets Sweet Sapphire.
Yes, yes.
Whose limo driver was Sapphire? seriously, she was somebody's limo driver.
Was she?
Yeah.
Yeah, the gimmick was she was just this huge Dusty fan.
Yeah.
You have to understand that even Vince, when he, like, Virgil from the Million Dollar Man was named Virgil as a rib on Dusty.
On Dusty.
Because Virgil Runnels is his real name.
Yeah.
And Vince didn't like Dusty. Not because Dusty did anything to him.
He was just a competitor.
He was a competitor who So he didn't like him for that reason.
Yeah.
You know? He didn't. There's no logical reason to not like him.
You just ribbit him for it, yeah.
Yeah, he's just, you exist. I don't like people that exist that aren't me.
Exactly.
I'm Vince McMahon. So basically that's why, you know, that was a rib on him.
Yes.
Because it was, oh, we're going to give, you know, he's a black guy. And Dusty thinks he's a black guy when he's not. And he'd been called Dusty since he was a kid. Nobody ever called him Virgil.
I mean, you had Akeem, the African Dream.
Yes.
Right? Who was, and do your promos like Dusty and you know, yeah.
Yeah, that was a rib Dusty, on him, right? Too.
That was another rib on him. So, I mean, there were ribs aplenty for Dusty from Vince. But, I mean, I also then, you transition over, you get Sweet Sapphire, who's this, you know, kind of out of shape lady.
She's just, she's this woman who is his biggest fan. She's at every show in the front row, wearing polka dots and going crazy for Dusty.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you know, it's whatever. It was, they just danced together and it wasn't anything to, you know, let's say to take seriously, right?
But no. And I got the vignette here. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna play this on my phone. Hopefully it sounds okay for people. And hopefully you don't get an ad first.
Of course
you
do.
You're gonna get an ad first, but don't worry, I can skip it in about one more second.
This is compelling radio.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Americana Butcher Shop. We don't sell no soda pop, but if you're looking for good beef, this is the place to stop. Ernest, come on over here. We're going to take in the treasure chest of beef right here and show you what it's all about here at Americana. Go on in here now, Ernest. Oh, man, and look at that nice piece of veal hanging up there. Ernest, tell him folk about this veal right here.
Nice.
Oh,
leg of veal.
Fine leg of veal. And what is this two-legged creature right here? We know what that is.
Nice leg of lamb.
Leg of lamb. I love leg of lamb. What we got right here, the old rump roast and everything.
A nice rump roast.
Ooh, and we know what this is right here.
The bologna.
This is bologna, and we are full of it today. Yeah, come on over here. We're going to make some Americana right here, ground up beef. Look here, stick it right in there. Get that thing working down in there. Now look down on the other end here, and you will see some of the finest Americana ground beef in the country right there. Ooh-wee! That looks so good. Let me tell you something now. I'm going to tell you one time, you cannot beat my prices. But you sure can't beat my meat.
Hey, aren't you?
Classic.
Sure can beat my meat.
You sure can beat my meat. Dusty.
Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome. We are full of it today.
I just love it. Yeah, and that's it. He came over there, like you say, he had to eat crow a little bit. I mean, the thing is about Dusty, what he always connected, I mean, he was, when you say the common man,
yeah,
that was it, right? Like he felt like you could, he was the most relatable.
Yeah.
He not only did he have the great charisma and, you know, he does promos and you can look at his promos and you see a lot of, I mean, as great a promo as he is, but you see a lot of like Muhammad Ali in there who took a lot of his from, you know, from,
well, they all have the same, I mean, you talk about superstar Billy Graham and, you know, being influenced, you know, by, you know, Gorgeous George,
thank you,
Fred Blassie.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So, but I mean, yeah, he did grow up in a neighborhood, dirt poor, son of a plumber. That was son legit.
Came out of the ditch at 8 years old.
Mainly a Latino Mexican neighborhood. He has, I believe he has some Native American background to him. Huh. And German, I think. I think his father was Native, and his mother was German.
So he's self-loathing, you're saying. But I think,
and you know, but he did grow up, like he literally did grow up, you know, digging the ditches.
But he had
with the black man who, you know, taught him so much and how to speak. And
Thunderbolt Patterson, right?
No. I think his name was TLC Lee or something like that.
Thunderbolt Patterson was the guy that always said that Dusty stole his stuff.
Oh, no. Well, he grew up. This is what I'm talking about, growing up in his neighborhood, digging ditches, literally.
Oh, yes.
I think his name was TLC Lee or something like that.
Hopper?
No.
Oh, because he was a plumber in one of his vignettes, too.
That's true.
He was a garbage man in another
one. Where he was pumping gas.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, in these vignettes. But he was. I mean, it really was. I mean, he really was. he managed to, he always found a way when he was doing one, when he really connected on those promos.
Yeah.
He made you feel like I'm just like you and I'm fighting for you.
Yeah.
That was the key.
Yeah.
This John Cena tries to do that.
Right.
You know, just like you and I'm fighting for you.
Yes.
But Dusty did it, you believed it.
Well, because Dusty looked like a lot of them.
That helped. Plus his delivery.
Yes, and his delivery.
Delivery and charisma. Different.
But I mean, you look at WWF and they said you had the Macho Man Randy or Macho King Randy Savage. A feud.
Ted DiBiase.
And then DiBiase, you know, buys Sapphire. And DiBiase.
That's his name.
And he,
at least in the '70s, that was his name.
It was. According to what was that guy's name? That did the St. Louis?
Yeah, Mushnecker.
Not Mushnick.
Something like that. Melt. Fuck.
Anyways, the announcer guy.
That guy.
Yeah. Larry Madison.
Madison. Start with an M.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway, and he and Dusty had Sapphire. Sapphire was bought by the Million Dollar Man, and so that brought in that fueled that feud, and that brought in Dustin. Then in whatever it was, 1990.
It was kind of weird because Dustin had already, like, I watched Dustin Rhodes' first ever promo.
Yeah,
Dustin Rhodes' first ever promo. He comes out, Dustin.
Yeah,
and Pete. This is in CWA, I believe. First promo on live TV. He's already the natural, but he comes out there, and the very first thing he knows is, "We're gonna get funky like a monkey in here." Like he is his dad.
Yeah.
Like he's speaking like his dad. He's got his dad's lisp. He was his dad.
Yeah.
But then he went to the, to the NWA, and he was mainly a jobber because he had to start at the bottom and work his way up, but
yep.
Showed potential and showed some, and got some tags where he had a little bit of success.
Yep.
And was already somewhat established. So I remember him showing up on, and I think he had already had like the TV title or something like that, or tag title, US tag title. I can't remember what it was, but
yeah.
He had some success. So I remember him showing up and taking on, DiBiase.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, they're acting like he's, you know, like in high school still.
Yes.
And whereas, he was already an established wrestler at that point.
Yeah, I think not a lot of years under his belt, but a couple. And he had to beat him. If DiBiase couldn't beat him in 10 minutes, was the gimmick.
Yeah.
And of course he didn't. Dustin lasted the 10 minutes, and it was a big thing. And you know, for, again, a mid-card feud. But when you think about Dusty and his mid-card feuds, it was the Boss Man, it was the Macho Man Randy Savage, and it was Ted DiBiase. You know, these are mid-cards.
These are his mid-card feuds, yeah. And he was already closing in on 50.
But you got to remember, these are that's the thing to think about, though. In WWF, these are mid-card feuds.
Yeah.
Involving
legends.
Everybody Hall except of Famers. For the Boss Man is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and you know, he'll be there someday.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't passed away, he'd probably already be there. He'd
already be there, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at and that's Dustin, then teams with Dusty at the Royal Rumble 91, and then that was Dusty finishing up and going back. Both of them went back to WCW, and that was the Virgil turn on DiBiase there, and so that sprung.
But, yeah, back. I mean, but again, I got to ask you. If it had been reversed, and Hulk Hogan had been in the NWA,
right,
as their top babyface, and Vince had Dusty and made him his top babyface, would it have turned out different? Would the WWF still have been number one?
That's tough. I think so. Possibly. I think so. Well, here's the thing. I think it could. Because, I mean, ultimately, it was WWF sprung off of... I just think of all the angles.
Dusty Rhodes loved music.
I think of all the angles.
Dusty Rhodes' first ring entrance music was Purple Rain.
Yeah, I just think
his of... His second? Gold Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger.
I just think of what made the
his
WWF...
His third? Midnight Rider by Willie Nelson.
There you go. And
we didn't talk Midnight Rider.
And his greatest.
There was another angle we talk about.
Yeah.
With Midnight Rider, there's another angle you talk about where you just kept going back to it. But finish your thought on if they had switched, if it had been the other way around.
I just think, I look at what happened, the perfect storm there, and could a Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes feud work? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Could Mr. T team with Dusty Rhodes? Absolutely. You know, could King Kong Bundy have fought Dusty Rhodes in a cage? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Andre, not so sure.
Andre, no.
Andre, Dusty, but the slam.
I don't think you would have had the same feuds, but I'm not saying it would have worked any less. Like, I don't think you would have gone on. You wouldn't have fought, had Orndorff and Bundy, and I don't even know about Mr. T. I still think it would have worked, though, because...
I think he could have done Bundy.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm just saying I'm not sure it would have gone down the same path, is all I'm saying. And certainly, even Andre. I mean, he probably could have done Andre, because he's such... The thing is, his charisma was equal to Hogan's.
Yes.
His talking ability was superior to Hogan's. I think he's the best talker ever. His wrestling was as good as Hogan's.
Yes.
His marketability and look was very different and not quite as good. Because he was the common man, though, he still was marketable, and if you did it right.
I think what you could have done is I really think Paul Orndorff turning on his best friend Dusty Rhodes could have headlined the Superdome.
Probably could have.
You know?
I just think his charisma was... I mean, the difference is Hulk Hogan was okay to... He was just protecting himself, but he didn't need to book it all. And you had to keep in mind, Dusty was working every night and booking the entire territory. And he wanted to do that. And that's, number one, that's an unbelievable amount of work. That's more work than even I think Vince has ever done.
I don't know about that.
But it's pretty, it's unbelievable. Vince never worked every night. Like, that's unbelievable.
He never worked every night.
No, not in the ring. Like, Dusty would do everything and work it in the ring. Plus, the thing about that is, you have to keep in mind, this is why Dusty says, and I don't know if this is true, but he would talk about how he would go out there and do these great promos every week. And that the most famous promo, the Hard Times promo, which really got famous when it was put on Ric Flair's 3-disc DVD, Ultimate Ric Flair Collection, as part of that feud. That's when people took notice of it, because it was just another great Dusty promo up until then. But the thing about you have to keep in mind is, he says that he didn't prepare that promo. Literally, he was sitting there, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Terry Taylor. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
It might have been Ole. I can't remember. But one of the guys just said to him, you're up. It's your turn. Like, he's running the show. He's booking the show. He's booking angles. He's timing things out. It's your turn to run a promo. He just gets up there and does that.
Yeah.
Like, he apparently didn't put any thought into it and whatever. And that's...
And I mean, that's one of the... Because it's... That promo is timeless.
Yes.
I mean, you could talk about now, you know, when you... 30 years old, and you'd get a gold watch until the computer's taking your job. That's hard times.
Yeah.
When you gotta go watch Money in the Bank on 2 weeks' notice, that's hard times. it always stays relevant.
We're recording this just before Money in the Bank.
It always stays relevant.
It always stays relevant. Well, the bit at the end where he gets quiet.
Yeah.
And he touches
the screen.
Says, touch my hand. You know, because that's power. It's like, I'm one of you. You're in here with me. And that that ability to connect. It's much the same. Like, we talk about when he turned originally in Florida and how he had all that great money when the Korean assassin attacked him.
Pak Song, yeah.
His promo, when it came out the next week, the crowd went nuts. And he just stared at the camera for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't say a word. The crowd's crazy.
Yeah, and he's nodding and looking around.
And then he just goes, I love you.
Yeah.
And he walks away. And that's, he says, is his favorite promo of his career.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's missing today, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that understanding and making people feel.
Which is ironic, because that's what he was doing. NXT was a promo coach.
Yeah.
In NXT, teaching him how to do promos.
He was teaching them how to do promos that he would cut, and then they would, instead of letting them cut those, they would give him a script then, and they can't cut it. But he does tell them, that's why it wasn't a promo class. It was
the art of communication.
The art of communication and acting. And he would say it's because no matter what they tell you to say, you have to believe it's real so they can believe it's real. No matter what they tell you to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's
and they do tell you to say things. So, though, again, if somebody had to... And that's why he never would have worked with Vince, because he would have wanted to be booking. He would have wanted to have more control. He was a control freak.
I don't know if that would have been... I don't know that that wouldn't have worked.
If Hogan, they were on the Hogan same was page, a control freak for himself, but he wasn't the control freak the same way. If they were on the same page, maybe.
That's the thing, is if they got on the same page, and if business was booming, they would have been on the same page.
That's true,
and,
if you're making money.
Yeah, if you're making money, you're the best of friends, right?
Yeah, he said this numerous times in his book, and I'm only like a third of the way in. And book, by the way, is a complete mess, but I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, it's full of grammatical errors and spelling errors.
Grammatical, you say?
Yes, and...
Huh.
What?
Grammatical errors?
Did I say something wrong?
Grammatical errors?
Fuck. But it's full of all those. Anyways, it's full of these things.
Testicles expanded?
Yeah, it jumps all over the place. That chronologically, it isn't in any kind of good shape.
Like our show here.
Yeah, it really is. It's because essentially what it is a super long, like a 10-hour shoot interview that's transcribed of Dustin. He's just all over the map.
Yeah.
But you still get great road stories of him drinking, him and Dr. Jerry Graham and Bobby Duncan, you know, going down the road and handing, and I think it's Harley or is it J.J. Dillon, one of them, but handing money to, like $100 to Graham because he has no money. And he's like, I'll go in and get us some beer. And then him coming out like a while later. And going, all they had was hard liquor. They didn't have any beer. So they go down to the next shop, and he'd go, I'll go back in, give me some more money. You know? And they would give him some more money like idiots. Or as Dusty said it, because every page has like 15, the word fuck used like 15 times. Dusty was famously profane.
Yeah.
And so Dusty would be like, and like dumb fucks, we give it to him again. Right? And they would give him, you know, the money, and he would go in and he'd come back out. Now he'd be stumbling a little bit and go, nothing but a hard liquor in there, you know? And they would start to figure out that they were getting worked. So it's great road stories like this. So it's a great book that way. You know what we could do actually is there is a audio book of it out there, but it's this guy in this really Texas voice properly saying it like Dusty. We should, since I have the book on my phone, we should read it over the course of like the next year. Like do an audio, like do a chapter. Every show, or a few pages of Dusty as Dusty.
As Dusty, dude.
And read his book to people.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about Dusty.
Want to do that?
I think that would be great.
I think it'd be fun.
This week in Dusty Road.
Yes.
But I think that's the other thing, too, is you talk about famous, you just mentioned it, we'll do it as Dusty Rhodes, and he's one of those guys, a Randy Savage, a Stu Hart.
Everybody does the imitation.
Everybody does a Dusty Rhodes mimic. Like we heard about...
business is business, baby.
We heard of Paul Heyman did a great one there on that Austin podcast. Oh, it was
unbelievable.
Right? And just, you know, one of those things that he's got that voice, that iconic.
Well, he had a lisp. And like Jack Swagger has shown, if you have a lisp, you can't be on TV and cut a promo.
Cody had that lisp inducting... Dusty into the Hall of Fame there.
Yeah, yeah.
2007.
Yeah.
And then somehow he got rid of it.
Oh, gee, I wonder.
Yeah. That's weird. But, well,
like, I see Dustin on his first promo had it, too.
Yeah, well, hey, Ric Flair in one of his first promos had it.
Ric Flair wanted to be Dusty.
He wanted his name to be Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes. And he wanted to be Dusty's, like, brother or cousin or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was, like, 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be Dusty Rhodes.
Instead, he turned out to be Buddy Rogers.
Yeah. He would go down the roads. He tells a story. He would tell his wife that he was booked, even if he wasn't booked, just so he could go out on the road with Dick Murdoch and Ric Flair.
Yeah. Or you mean Dusty Rhodes?
Or, yeah, just Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch. That's basically Flair was his driver.
Yeah.
And his young boy.
Yeah.
You know? And just... amazing to think that's...
And their career, I mean, and obviously anytime you have two people who both want to be champion and both think they're the best, I mean, they worked together and liked each other, and then there was times when they were, much like Hogan and Savage, they were at each other's throats, and then they were good again, and then they weren't good, and you know, they had a lot of that.
But it's hit Ric Flair pretty hard. I understand he still hasn't stopped crying.
So I'm going to... We talked about... The Sapphire thing.
Sweet Sapphire!
I'm going to play what I think is his best promo.
Oh, is it when he loses Sapphire?
Yes.
Yeah,
SummerSlam 1990.
Great. Yes.
I think this is his best promo during his WWE run.
I think we did this on a promo show, actually.
No, we didn't. I don't think so. I think I looked for it and couldn't find it, but I found it now.
Okay.
So this will be on Daily Motion, so it will undoubtedly have an ad. Probably a fairly
long one. Is the ad for Americana Butcher Shop?
We could only be so lucky. So in the meantime, there's an ad.
Oh yeah, good.
And this will be a 30-second ad because I don't think you can skip them on Daily Motion.
So we have the Midnight Rider.
The Midnight Rider, yeah.
Where he lost the Loser Leaves Town and then had to come back in a mask.
Yes, okay. You're not doing this story justice. So anyways, but we're just a few seconds away. We're going to play this promo, and then we will talk about the Midnight Rider, because it's one of the other great, well, just a great, great dusty thing.
All right, from Sean Mooney and Vince and Roddy up at the broadcast booth.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, it's buffering.
I gotta tell you this, SummerSlam, everything that it's cracked up to be with that great match we've just seen, and of course two title changes earlier on in the night. One of the saddest things I've seen, however, Dusty Rhodes, your walk down that tunnel here at the Spectrum, a very dejected and despondent man after what happened with Sapphire.
What I caught a gene is emotion. This great sport and the World Wrestling Federation is built on emotion. Sapphire took the money. That's fine. I offered up my innocence to her. She paid me back in scorn. Now only America can give me shelter from the storm. I am in a storm, baby. And walking out to our jet Cadillac, many thousands of fans were screaming, "When you gonna get bad, Big Dust? When you gonna get mad, Big Dust? When you gonna get even, Big Dust?" Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man, the man that can buy anything, but Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, but the American way of life that lives in his heart. So, Ted DiBiase, I'm getting bad, baby, and I'm coming for you.
From the man Dusty Rhodes himself, now our broadcast cop.
That, to me, is like one of those, give me chills.
Actually, and you know what's funny is that when he did his Hall of Fame speech, he ripped off a lot of his old promos.
Yeah.
Like, he talked about hard times, because he got into the Hall of Fame in Detroit, so he said, auto workers, even, he went through that that promo. Even now, the auto workers getting laid off, that's hard times.
Yeah.
And even, and he did that too, he said, the WWE, the wrestling business built on emotion.
You know what, and as much as we can play it, and it's great to just hear it, if you could only see his face, he looks like he's fighting back tears.
Yeah.
From this betrayal. Yeah. And it works. And you don't look at him, it was much the same way you when he would sell. He was great at selling.
Yes.
And he would look like desperate. And you know, I mean, Hulk Hogan would do this too. Remember, he would get like, also, like he'd hug the guy's leg. And it would, you would think it would make them seem weak.
Mm-hmm.
But what it made them seem was seem vulnerable, and it made you feel for them.
Yes.
And Dusty and Ricky Steamboat and Hogan in that situation made you, you know, again, that's what's missing in the selling of today.
Well, Hogan's a great comparison because, I mean, they both had Hulk had the Hulk up, right?
Yes.
And Dusty had the magnetic bionic elbow.
Magnetic. The flip flop and fly magnetic. Flip flop
and fly.
It was one of those moves where we really did, I mean, years before the internet, me and my friends would watch him and start joking that it was the magnetic elbow, not the bionic elbow.
Yeah.
But it was great.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's what made it great.
Nobody's been able to really, the closest guy I've ever seen to doing it right since then is Bully Ray. But it's a move that nobody else is, like, unlike the DDT, which everybody's stolen, it's a move that's still just Dusty's.
Just Dusty's, exactly. And and then we look over at we're jumping around a bit, but I mean, the other memories are WCW Saturday Night.
Yes.
You know, the commentating.
He was doing, when he got to be commentating, he was such an entertaining commentator.
6:05, he's in the trying to get to the pay window right here on the mothership, TBS Tony Schiavone. You know, just, you know, every recap. This is how we got to the pay window. Right here, we're on the mothership.
Yes, the Tony mothership.
The mothership, 6:05 Eastern, Tony Schiavone, WCW.
I seem to recall, now, if I'm right, didn't he, like, we talk about the great promo with Dustin, where he apologizes for not being there for him, but he says he's going to be, please let me be there for you now, you know, taking on Arn Anderson. Didn't he cut some, I seem to remember some great promo, I think it was for Cactus Jack, trying to, or maybe it was the Dust, or maybe it was the Nasty Boys around that same time. Just something to try and.
Yeah.
Does this sound familiar to you?
He cut a great promo for the Nasty Boys. It was in that same. It was right after he cut that apologetic promo.
Yeah.
For the War Games.
Yes.
And he's Dustin and Embi on the same page, and he said, well, like I said, we got to get some partners here for the War Games. And we got to go, what do we got to do, Dustin? We got to go down to Nastyville.
That was it.
And they went into a bar.
Yes.
And he cut this promo. And that was the one that I had referenced where he says, Arn Anderson, Terra Funk, Ming, the list is endless of these guys that are going to come up here and try to take it from us.
Yeah.
And that's how they convinced, Dusty convinced the Nasty Boys to join, who were just turned face, and or that was their official face turn.
Yeah.
And so it was them against Colonel Parker's stud stable of Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Bunkhouse Buck, and it was supposed to be Robert Parker as well, but I think Ming ended up getting in there, was the way that it worked. I don't remember specifically, or maybe Robert Parker went in and Ming was still on the outside. It was a thing, but Ming was still new, and I think there might have been no compete stuff that he could appear on the TV, but he couldn't have matches, or there was something.
Yeah, there was probably something like that.
Something that way. So, because he was Haku, but yeah, just the WCW Saturday Night.
I just seem to remember that promo where he kept on repeating himself the same, but it worked.
Yeah, and it was he had all those. Just classic, he'd do the commentary on the pay-per-views, and it would be, during the NWO era, and they'd have the cruiserweight stuff, and, and Mike Tenay would get on there and talk about, a springboard hoodie-kanrata, and you'd go, what, I don't know what, would you call that a hoodie-kanrata? I don't know what that is. That's pretty sweet there.
It was amazing his psychology, actually, as an announcer. It wasn't that good, but he was so damn entertaining.
Yeah.
He loved him anyways.
Oh, fantastic. Kind of, hell, I remember.
That reminds me of Jerry Lawler, another guy he had long-term feuds with over the years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But, I just remember, I can remember he was so good on WCW Saturday Night, and we didn't get Nitro yet, but then on, I don't think it was even on TBS. I think for some reason it was on the Nashville network back in the day. And I remember it was a NASCAR show or a stock car show that they had, a car racing show. And Dusty Rhodes was going to be one of the co-hosts.
Yes.
And it was on, I think it was on like 7 Eastern, so it was on 5 o'clock in Calgary on Friday nights, which was perfect. Because you just finished the day, you got home, you're about to eat before you go out, and there's this 2-hour show before you go out with, it's just car racing, but it's Dusty Rhodes.
It's Dusty Rhodes
and
Dusty.
And the man they call B and I would just watch it because of Dusty Rhodes.
Because Dusty was,
and, he would
and just, that's it. I mean, again, my first introduction to Dusty Rhodes is the Aftermags, I would read about these things, and then months later, when the videotapes would finally make their way up here, I'd go and watch them. And these videotapes, I'd already heard about Dusty, but I would look at the videos. I would be like, how is this guy such a big star? But then I would, go watch the videos.
Yeah.
And, you talk about blood, sweat, and tears. He's like the living embodiment of what it felt like blood, sweat, and tears were in a ring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just had that ability to emotionally connect with the crowd. That, as I said, Hogan had that, but Dusty, was just that.
But Hogan was a superhero. Hogan hulked up.
Yes,
Dusty.
But Dusty was the guy that when he was getting hit, you were getting hit.
Yeah.
When Hogan got hit, our hero was getting hit. When Dusty got hit, it was like one.
Us,
it was like watching.
We were
Hogan
getting hit.
Getting hit, and that was the. That was his thing. I mean, he continued. I mean, he left WCW. And he went to ECW with Steve Corino.
It was great.
Yeah.
I remember watching it. This is about the time that they got a national TV and everything.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this and thinking to myself, and Corino, you could see immediately. I liked him. But you could also see immediately why he would never end up in the WWE or WCW.
Yeah.
Like, you could see the look wasn't there.
Right.
But Dusty liked him. Dusty was just great at...
He almost made it to WWF.
He almost did, yeah.
He was almost the fake 1-2-3 kid.
That's true.
Yeah.
But Dusty just... I mean, I remember thinking to myself, Dusty won't be able to go. Like, he's too old.
I mean,
and then he gets in the ring, and he does that flip, flop, and fly, and he shakes those hip.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they put on the you know, chain for the around their necks.
Yeah.
For a match, and you believed again.
Yeah.
Dusty could make you believe.
Yes, that was the thing. He could always had that ability to make yourself believe. I mean, he had a match in ROH.
Yeah.
In 2004, it didn't look out of place.
No.
You know? And no. And then they were trying to get Dusty to be the partner of Ric Flair at that, whatever it was called, Taboo Tuesday.
That's right, yeah.
Cyber Sunday, yeah. Whatever it was.
Ended up being Piper, yeah.
From the voting. But they thought they were pushing Dusty.
Yeah.
To say, vote for this guy. Because though Dusty was almost tag team champion.
Yeah.
And they were pushing him and pushing him and pushing him. But, I mean... He was also the TNA commissioner.
Yes, he was.
For a while in the back of the truck.
And he had legitimate booking power, obviously, in TNA as well.
Yes.
And it was one of those things where, again, he booked himself. Like, he booked himself in an angle in a match with AJ Styles. Had a really good match. But at that point, at some point, that was one of the points where people looked at him and went,
okay.
They're like, you're still pushing yourself on top?
Yeah.
Like, you can be in there, but you have to put yourself in. He's their top guy.
Again. Yeah.
Like, you're, you know... His time in TNA had its good and its bad, but it's unfortunately not very well remembered.
No.
And probably deservedly so.
Yeah. And I mean, back to that, then he comes back and is back in gets a Legends deal and is back in the fold, and they you know, release his, you know, his DVD and his baby butt wipe. And he's back in you know, in Legends segments and yeah. What have you. And then most recently, of course, with Dustin and Cody, you know, Goldust and Cody, and then Stardust.
Really, really hard watching some of that today. The very last segment where he brings the brothers together.
Yes.
And then they go out and they have the match, they lose. And then Cody turns on him and Stardust, you know, and he comes out and goes, "That's your brother." And he says, "That's not my brother." And then he talks about how Cody is dead. And then he looks at him and says, "And to me, my father is dead too." And you're just like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's.
But he did start to go downhill pretty quick. I mean, we saw him at WrestleMania weekend and wasn't looking so hot.
I really wish we had gotten his, and that's why I'm so glad we did get the autographs of the few legends we did.
Yeah,
I really wish we had. Boy, damn it, if we'd been able to get his autograph.
Yeah, no, I know. But I mean, he's there, and he wasn't looking as good as even he was when. There was that Dusty and Dustin, or rather Cody and Goldust against the Shield.
Yeah.
In that match, there at the, it was like a battleground or a throwaway show, but that was basically the main event of the show for most people.
Yeah, it was.
And he was looking, you know, older, but fine there.
Yeah.
Now he just, down, you know, he went downhill pretty fast. And it's a detail, well, I don't know.
He was 69, I mean, you know. 69, pretty, I mean, he was at the Performance Center the day before his death.
Yes.
Doing a promo class. So, I mean, he was active right to the end.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I haven't heard anything from Dusty, from Cody or Dustin. They're pretty silent on Twitter.
Yeah.
A lot of people are giving tributes, and deservedly so.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything from them. I do, you know, my best wishes to their family. It's really, really hard and
odd times.
The thing is Dustin and I mean, he cut that promo. Let me be there for you, but I mean, he wasn't there for Dustin growing up. He was too busy being Dusty Rhodes.
Yes,
he was too busy looking out for himself,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't there. And his son idolized him anyways, but it still sowed the seed of resentment. And even in that promo and after that promo, and Dustin ends up going and becoming Gold Dust.
Yeah.
And they still, for a long time, weren't talking and they weren't close.
And it was more about Terry.
Mm-hmm.
The Dusty didn't.
Well, Dusty blamed Terry Runnels.
Yeah, and didn't like her, and she
believed that she tried to
sway him
to be away from him. But at these last times, they were they had repaired their relationship. They both got older. Dustin got clean.
Yeah,
and they were close again. And he did love his sons, and he did love his family. He didn't show it as much growing up, like I say, to Dustin as he should have. the Cody, because Cody's a full generation younger.
Yeah.
And because this is why Dusty wasn't on the road working as much, and was doing more TV announcing and that type of thing instead.
Yes.
He was there really for Cody.
Yeah.
And so they had a completely different
viewpoint. And it was funny in the Hall of Fame that they do, it was Cody that talked about, I never wondered, you know, where my dad was, because I knew when my dad was away, that was the meal on my plate, that was the clothes on my back.
Yeah.
And they talk about it. And I remember thinking at the time, I'm going, oh, I wonder if, what, could Dustin talk about this? At the time, I don't think so. You know. And just to flip it, but that was the...
Well, it's different with Dusty. When Dusty, like I say, in his book, he mentions this a few times, that he made enough money to buy Miami, but pissed it all away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't on Dustin, you know?
No.
And like I say, Cody had a much more normal upbringing in that way.
Yes.
But towards the end here, like Dustin and Dusty... You know, they would go hunting and stuff like that here over the last few years, and they worked tight, and that relationship was repaired, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And,
no, and that's exactly, you got some, you know, you did get that closure, for it. I mean, 69 is still...
Way too young.
Way too young, and an age that you don't really think about.
No.
You know, it's either early, or you live a long life.
There's certain guys I think they're going to pass away anytime. Dusty actually wasn't on that list, despite everything.
No, and... You know, and as I said, 69 is at an age where you don't really think about it. You think of maybe like 50, or you think of, okay, they're going to be, you know, 80.
Yeah.
You know, just like a Vern Gagne, or, you know, something like that. But, you know, long life. But, yeah, never, it was really a shock, to put it that way. It was a huge shock. There's a show immediately following Raw called Remembering the Dream for an hour on the WWE Network that'll be their tribute show to it, so it'd be interesting to see kind of what they do there, because I mean, you know, Dusty was, you know, he was close. I mean, you think of it, he wrestled for Vince Sr.
Yeah,
he wrestled for Vince, and now he's working with Hunter.
I think it was 47, you know? 48 years in the industry, something like that. You know, he was started right out of, I think he was 21 when he started. Out of West Texas University, I believe.
That's right, yeah, West Texas State.
Where he played baseball and football. And
all those guys with, was it West Texas? That was Tully Blanchard, Tito Santana.
And when he didn't make it in football, that's when he ends up becoming the wrestler, thinking, I could do this. Because, I mean, Bruiser Brody and Terry Funk and all these guys were in that neighborhood and that school. And he had gone to school with, I believe, Brody even.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, he could see that those guys were having success. He had started making just a little bit of money, started to become the upper mid-card guy, and starting to get some nice payouts, like $500.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, when he got a phone call from Miami Dolphins asking him to come for a tryout. And he just looked at the money and went, no, I'm retired from football, you know. Very much, I've said this before, like we have the We Talk, we're We Talk Wrestling, obviously, WeTalkWrestling.com. We have the... sister network, We Talk Podcast, where this show is also available, and some other shows and music shows and different blogs and comic books and stuff. There was a comic book creator who recently passed away. And one of the other creators from the generation below, our generation, came on Twitter and said, because all this outpouring came out for him.
Right.
Afterwards. And he came out and said, for those of you who are saying something right now, it's appreciated, but don't wait until that person passes.
Yeah.
And it's much the same thing here. You know, I think the same thing. I wish I just tweeted Dusty. I know he wasn't on, he had it, and he was on Twitter a little bit, and I think he would have gotten it. But if there's, you know, a wrestler or an athlete or a musician, an actor, artist, writer, whatever, no matter how big they are, small they are, if they've touched your life, don't wait. Take a little time and just say thank you, because you'd be amazed how much that means to them, and you'd be amazed how many of them actually need something like that, and you know, and aren't, as don't have as much money or fame as they might once have. So I mean, that's kind of my thing, is I'm just like, don't wait. If there's somebody who meant something to you, say it now, not when they've passed. And let them know.
For instance, I really like Tyrion. on Game of Thrones. So it doesn't matter how small they are. Maybe I'll tweet them.
Not all of them is small, you know.
That's what I've heard.
Think again.
Think again.
Yes. Yes.
But, no, I think, I mean, really it's,
I'm sorry, I accidentally turned on your, printer, I think, there.
Oh, is that what it was?
I think that's what happened there, yeah.
But, no, I think that, I mean, Dusty, he is, as I said, going to go down, really Vince McMahon used to say, one of the all-time greats.
Like I said, I think he's probably the greatest promo. I think he's the greatest promo. I really do. I think he's the greatest promo. Yeah. I look at the guys who I think are the greatest promos, and, you know, Piper and Savage, Mick Foley, yeah, Ernie Ladd, and superstar Billy Graham. Billy
Graham, you can go...
you know, and but I look at Dusty, and I think...
Flair was, you know... but yeah, Dusty is... Yeah, I mean, you can think of just so many, and there was so... it was a matter of it didn't matter what he was talking about.
No.
Like, you could just say, here you go, Dusty, here's this pen.
Cut please, a promo on
please
it.
Please talk about it for the next 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think it would be great.
Yeah.
You know, and that was proof in that, as I said, that car racing show that I watched. I don't remember the name of it, but it was because Dusty Rhodes was on, and he entertained me for 2 hours. His cards went around a track, you know? Yeah,
which he could give a shit about.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, it wasn't even about that. I was probably doing something else
while
the show was on, but it was like listening to Dusty Rhodes on the radio, let's say. Yeah. You know, and just a fantastic promo, 69 years old, you know, too soon, and he said, you know, thoughts, prayers to their family, and just, you know, as I said, talk about hard times.
Yeah, he touched a lot of lives. So, I don't know. Why don't you do the plugs? I'd like to play one last video when we go out. So
okay. I'm just prepping so that now. We're at We Talk Wrestling.
I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I think you'll appreciate it when I play it. And that will be the way that we go off the air.
All right. We're at We Talk Wrestling on Twitter, which, as Mo had said, you know, if when we touch your lives, tweet us. Facebook.com/WeTalkWrestling. WeTalkWrestling.com is the website. And Addy, ADDIE. @WeTalkWrestling.com is how you can email us. And we're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes, we're TuneIn Radio app. And you got another ad you're buffering through here or what?
If I had been smart, I would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I wasn't.
No.
No, okay, it doesn't look like there is a...
an ad.
There's no ad on this one.
Is this the Shockmaster?
No, this is not the Shockmaster. I think you'll appreciate this, but thank you very much for listening, folks, and we'll be back after Money and Who Gives the Fuck.
Yes.
We're going to go watch that for you.
That's hard times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, volume's good.
Dusty Rhodes. passion. And that came out of him, and I think people see that.
I am the hit maker, the record breaker.
I have wined and dined with kings and queens, and I've slept in alleys and dined on pork and beans.
He just oozed charisma. He has a career that most of us only dream about.
Get a dream, hold on to it, and shoot for the sky.
We are proud to induct Dusty Rhodes as a member of the 2007 WWE Hall of Fame.